It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Our special guest today is Robert Gordon. He's a corn producer from Dalhart, Texas, joins us in a moment. Austin Scott's a representative from Georgia, member of the House Ag Committee.
If I may, this control is not limited to fertilizer, though. We're seeing increased monopolization, whether it be seed or any other type of input cost. And then what you see in some cases is like communist China, where they stepped in and they bought Syngenta. And so I think, Mr. Chairman, we've got a lot of work to do in making sure not only that foreign countries don't own our ag input supply, but that not any individual company inside America controls too much of our ag inputs. And if we could get that right, we'd have significant competition in the input market, and we'd have more fair pricing to our farmers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Robert Gordon. Robert's a diversified producer from Dalhart, Texas Panhandle, at the Commodity Classic in New Orleans. Hey, it's great to see you.
It's good to see you, Tony.
Well, if the two of us are standing together, it means there's a commodity classic going on. Seems like this is the only time we get an opportunity to see each other this year. But how important is it to get this back going again?
Well, I think it's very important. You know, it gives us a time to get together and talk about our issues around the country and meet new people and new ideas and it's just so great to be back in person. You know, last year it was canceled. We kind of had our corn meetings virtual, but it's amazing to see the crowd that we have this year. You know, I was a little hesitant. I'm thinking, you know, I don't know how big the crowd's going to be, but so far it's the attendance is really great.
Now, for anybody who has never been to a commodity classic before, and obviously there's a trade show here, and you might think, well, it's just something like a farm show, regional farm show. What makes this different than a regional farm show?
Well, you know, it's a huge trade show as far as that goes, but there's so much more that goes with it, with the sessions they have, the different sessions that you can go to, educational, and just there's so much you can learn here. It's really a neat place to come. It's not like your normal farm show where it's more of a social event. You can actually learn a lot of things here and so forth.
Obviously, there are people from all across the country here. A lot of corn growers, but you've got soybean, wheat growers. And, you know, when you start mixing all of that sorghum in as well, you're pretty much covering the entire country. But have you had opportunities to meet and develop relationships with producers in other areas, or at least find out something that's happening in their world that you didn't know that makes you better at what you do?
Oh, I think so. You know, we're always learning things from other producers around the country. You know, of course, there's things that they do that won't work in our country. You know, just a variety of things like some of the cover crop issues, because, you know, it's hard for us in an irrigated environment where we're limited on water. You know, I mean, cover crop's a great idea, but it's for where you almost get too much water, and where we're trying to put water on and grow a cover crop, we don't get the benefit out of it like other people do. So we have to learn to work around these things and you know, it's really interesting. You know, we do a lot of things the same, but then there's some things we have to do different.
So we're rolling into 2022, and I imagine your rain gauge might have a little more dirt in it than it's had moisture to start the year. You've been doing this long enough. You've seen some years starting like this. Are there some concerns as you look to how dry it is?
Well, yeah, we're extremely concerned. This is the driest that I think I've ever seen it in my lifetime since I've been, you know, had an operation running. And you know, they talk about the 50s were extremely dry, but we have not had any measurable precip since September. And we've had a lot of wind, and we've had some warm days, we have cold days, and you know, we're pumping more water on wheat than we normally would. Running sprinklers in the winter is not any fun because you crank them up and run a day or two, and then you got to shut them off, and it's been a real challenge. We just hope we're, you know, of course, we're a day closer to a rain every day, but we're hoping that day is sooner than later, but because we're going to need some help from Mother Nature to actually produce a good crop.
Most of our hard red winter wheat acres are our dry land acres, which means we've lost most of that crop at this point, especially over the southern high plains. Does that really put it back on guys like you that've got the ability to keep a pivot going? I mean, at this point, it looks like you may have the only winter wheat available this year.
Well, that's true. You know, you go from south of us to even north up in Oklahoma. Oklahoma's got quite a bit of pivot irrigation, but you get up into Kansas where it's all dry land, and there it's extremely dry all the way to Canada, you know, and so it's going to be a challenge. Most of our wheat that we grow is, or I should say about half of it is seed wheat for a company. So, you know, and they want that on 100% irrigation because they have to make wheat every year. But it's a challenge, you know, and then there's a lot of wheat in our country that's chopped for silage for the dairies. And, you know, they're thinking, you know, the tonnage is not going to be there this year unless something drastically changes in the next 30 days. You know, it's going to be a light crop. We can pump all the water we want on it, but if we don't get help from Mother Nature, we just cannot grow wheat, good wheat, you know. But, you know, we could possibly have average, you know, we'll have an average or below average yield looking at it right now. Hopefully things will change. You know, as a farmer, we're always optimistic, and you know, we'll deal with the challenges we have in front of us.
Well, I promise I won't keep us on the challenge side much longer here, but we've got to start looking towards harvest, and we might have a high price for wheat at this point. And again, as we're looking towards the wheat harvest, we're also looking at planting season. But this all ties in input cost, and especially at this point, diesel costs. So if you have a machine, you might obviously be in a little better shape than having to have it custom harvested. But is that harvest side a concern?
Well, it is, you know. And of course, you know, fuel, I think, I heard this morning diesel hit a all-time record on what it cost, and so that's a challenge, you know. Of course, we don't run tractors as much as we used to because of our, you know, no-till, a lot of no-till and strip-till on the summer crops and so forth, but we still use a lot of fuel in a year, and what they're telling us right now, you know, diesel will be available, you know, but it's not going to be cheap. And so, yeah, we've got a lot of challenges ahead of us. All the input prices have just gone through the roof. Fertilizers just took a huge increase. And, you know, of course, the fortunate thing is commodity prices are going up, too. You know, wheat was really high. It's dropped off the last couple of days. But, you know, if you go... Well, when I was home last week, you couldn't get a bid for new crop wheat, and because it's so volatile, you know, the elevator, you can price it on the board, but that's a little scary doing that in such a volatile market, and so it's just kind of got everything upside down right now. But hopefully, that'll all kind of level out here in the next few weeks.
Okay, we've talked about challenges enough. Let's talk about things that. You know, maybe it's something you've seen, a new piece of equipment here, or, you know, a bit of information you picked up here. Maybe it has nothing to do with this. Maybe it's just the fact that something's happening back home. But what keeps you going? What's kind of got you excited and still gives you that little twinkle in the eye, if you will?
Well, you know, of course, agriculture, that's our lifeblood, and we love what we do. We love to go out and put that seed in the ground and watch it grow and take it to harvest, you know. And, of course, I get the opportunity to do that with my two sons, and that makes it even better. You know, there's everybody's going to eat. So, you know, agriculture is going to be around. And it's a great industry, a lot of great people involved, and you know, we have our challenges at times, but there's a lot of rewards in agriculture for sure.
Well, I'm going to wrap us up with tying into what you said there, the opportunity to spend time with your sons, which highlights the importance of families and family operations. A lot of times we get caught in this whole, you know, a corporate ag type thing. But for those who don't really understand how family farms work and the fact that it might be a corporation, how important is it to have that family tie back to that farm?
Oh, it's really important to us. You know, my boys, when they got out of school, you know, of course, my oldest, that's what he wanted to do from the start. My younger son, he wanted to go off and do something else, and it wasn't long. He said, "You got a spot for me on the farm?" I said, "We'll make a spot," you know, and so we went out and leased a little more ground, and now they're, you know, they're equal partners in our operation. So it's just, it's been a lot of fun, and really enjoyed. You enjoy working with your kids, you know. Yeah, and you get different perspectives from, you know, each one has a little different, you know, idea on some things. So they kind of specialize on different things, and it's been a lot of fun, and hopefully it'll go on for years, you know. Got grandkids that, you know, we hope, you know, we're not going to push them to do a certain thing. They need to make their own choices, and but we hope it continues for generations.
Well, in a roundabout way, you're describing farming as well. You drop the seed in the ground and hope everything happens and nurture it along the way. That's how family farming operations are. Robert, so great to see you. Thanks for your time, and we wish you the best in 22.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to see you here, and hopefully we'll be back at the Commodity Classic next year in Florida.
Robert Gordon is with the Texas Corn Producers. He's a producer from Dalham and Hartley counties. From Commodity Classic in New Orleans, I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
If you're big into baling and want the heaviest, densest, most consistent large square bales possible, you'll be glad to know Heston by Massey Ferguson delivers with the all-new 2370 Ultra High Density Large Square Baler. The world's first Class 8 baler designed to hammer out the heaviest bales in the industry faster than ever before. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24-7 service for your 24-7 operation.
Welcome back to the Agribusiness Report. National Ag Day coming up on March 22nd, sponsored by dozens of ag groups. This year focusing on growing a climate for tomorrow, highlighting farmers' efforts to protect the environment. Again, March 22nd.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate Digital Agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you. This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Robert Gordon, Texas corn producer from Dalhart.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Why sorghum?
I think sorghum is a smart choice for growers because it just fits well with our limited moisture. There's a lot of improvement the last few years. It's just been a really good crop for us. It just works.
Sorghum has the ability over many crops to sit and wait on moisture, so it's a smart choice there.
Sorghum is a smart choice because it is flexible and tough. It's a good crop.
Rain or shine, sorghum is the smart choice.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Dry conditions are expected to continue in several areas of the country.
We do have some limited updates from the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Weekly state reports for the week ending March 6th indicating that topsoil moisture is rated 81%, very short to short, in Kansas and Texas.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says Oklahoma also is notably dry.
In those states, looking at some of the crop reporting numbers for the week ending March 6th, Texas, 75%, three-quarters of the winter wheat rated in very poor-to-poor condition. And as you move northward through the Great Plains, those numbers for Oklahoma, 57%, very poor-to-poor. Kansas, 39%.
So what is the connection?
The lack of soil moisture having a real impact on the crops and the rangeland and pastures as we move into this earlier-than-normal spring arriving across the South.
This is Stephanie Ho in Washington, D.C.